When I was in eighth grade, I read a book, but I can't tell you the title. I remember it, but I can't say it. The book was Dick Gregory's autobiography. Dick Gregory was a black comedian and author, and he entitled his book A Euphemism for Black That Began with N. A word that is offensive in the best of circumstances and certainly shouldn't be said from the pulpit by a rabbi on Shabbat. And on the back of the book, he explains why he began writing it with the title that is an insult to blacks, to African Americans. He wrote on the back, "Dear Mama, I know you're in heaven, and I want you to know the next time you hear the word N, you'll know that they're just advertising my book." His book is about growing up black in America, about the slights, petty and serious, the humiliations, the insults, the cruelty that he endured, and the way in which it shaped his humor and his ability to meet situations with humor. He tells of going into a restaurant in the South and sitting down at the table and having the waitress say to him, "We don't serve blacks here," except that she didn't use the word black. She used the title of his book. And he said, "That's okay. I don't eat blacks. I'd like a chicken." But when you read the jokes, you felt the pain. And when you heard of the life that his mother, to whom he dedicated the book, led, a life of constant poverty, constant humiliation, unremitting discrimination, you realize that while it is legally true that blacks were emancipated during the Civil War in the 1860s, the truth is that America still had a long way to go. At the same time, or around the same time, I read a book by John Howard Griffin. John Howard Griffin was a white journalist and author who had his skin artificially darkened by radiation and medication and traveled in the South as a black man. The book, by the way, is still in print. You can still read it. And at a certain point, he couldn't stand it anymore. Because every day, at odds with his experience as a white man in America, every single day, he suffered from discrimination, from cruelty, from anger, from humiliation, from belittlement, from the legacy of racism and slavery. That book was published in 1959, 2 years before the president-elect was born, when many of us sitting in this room were alive not so long ago. There were really two different sorts of legacies for blacks in the 20th century in America. One is summed up by the experience of Gregory and the brief experience of Griffin. That is the deliberate, targeted dismissal, anger, prejudice. And the other, expressed by the most famous novel that came out of 20th century black experience, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, a classic of American literature, whose message is summed up in its title, that America was a society in which blacks were invisible, that before the civil rights movement, America didn't wish to see them, that they might have jobs in the service economy, they might be your housekeeper or your gardener, but you didn't see them as human beings. As functions, yes, but not as human beings. There weren't friendships There weren't marriages. There wasn't closeness. They were either discriminated against or invisible. This is the legacy of a long history of America's racial history, racial relations that began in this country with people taking other people from their homes, from their families, from their children, from their parents, and bringing them here in slave ships by the tens of thousands to be the slaves of white people in America. That is our history as a country. And unless we recognize that that history has implications for generations, we won't understand what happened on Tuesday. We just, in our prayers, over and over and over again, recalled the experience of slavery in Egypt. That was 3,000 years ago, and it still impresses us and still makes an impact on our collective conscience today. Slavery in America ended 150 years ago. And anybody who thinks that it doesn't still have implications for the relations between white and black has no respect for history. And we Jews have a lot of respect for history. It was only in 1964 that three civil rights workers were killed in the South, and two of them were Jews. It was in the march in Selma, Alabama, that Abraham Joshua Heschel was linked arm in arm with Martin Luther King and marched, and said afterwards that he felt that his feet were praying. If anyone outside of the experience can understand the experience of being discriminated against, of being hated, of being persecuted, of being enslaved, it ought to be the Jews. We should understand. And if you hear a discriminatory remark from a Jew, you tell them they ought to be ashamed of themselves. Ashamed of themselves. Because God knows, throughout history, we have heard the same about ourselves. When we came in to Ellis Island, you may not know this, but the American government conducted IQ tests and decided that Jews had lower IQs than other immigrants. A lot, you know, has to do with your culture and your experience and where you came from and what you've seen. So if you hear these sorts of remarks from our people, you tell them that what they just said is profoundly un-Jewish. Now, I have no idea if the president-elect will prove to be the best, the worst, good, mediocre, poor president we ever elected. I don't know. But you have to be blind and deaf to the history of this country to fail to understand that what happened on Tuesday was extraordinary. Whether you like him or you like his policies or you detest them, this actually is not about Barack Obama. It's about us. It is about us. It's about the fact that I know in my own life that I grew up in an integrated neighborhood in Philadelphia. But that neighborhood was only integrated for a brief time, because as the African-American community moved in, the white community moved out. And so I had 4 or 5 years of growing up where white and black kids played together in the street, but if I go back to my old house now, there's not a white face in the neighborhood. They all left. They all went to the suburbs. And I remember when I first moved to Los Angeles that I was shocked at how segregated a city we live in. It was astonishing to me, having grown up in an integrated city, to see what it is like to live in Los Angeles. But the fact that our lives may be segregated does not mean that our minds should be shut off. And you have to know, you have to understand the history, you have to see the parallels. In every college course on literature these days, they teach Toni Morrison's great novel, Beloved. Toni Morrison, the only living American winner of the Nobel Prize. And you know what Beloved is about? It's really about, as you discover, as you move into the novel, it's about a woman who decides to kill her child rather than have her grow up as a slave. A decision, by the way, that has many echoes in Jewish history. Many echoes. Both in the Middle Ages and, most recently and tragically, in the Shoah, in the Holocaust. We know this experience. We have been there. And therefore, when America, the product of these tortured racial history, goes into the voting booth and says, we are colorblind, we don't care, that is an earthquake, a storm, a repudiation of much of the ugliness of our history. And any American who, whatever their reservations may or may not be about the individual and his policies, any American who wasn't proud and moved Tuesday night knows nothing about America. And if you don't know, then let me tell you. I have for years now spoken to Jewish groups who will say something of the following. Do you think that something like the Shoah could happen here? And part of my answer, it's a longer answer and I won't inflict it on you, but part of my answer always is, and I will ask you this today, even today, if I said to you, okay, you're about to be born in America. You can be born anything. Is it more disadvantageous, is it worse for you to be born a Jew or an African American? I have never, ever had somebody in the audience raise their hand and say, you know what, if I'm going to make it in America, I'd rather be black. Because you know and I know. You know and I know that somebody with white skin gets a pass in a way that somebody with dark skin does not. We don't live in a racist country. I don't believe that, and I have never believed it. Just go to any college campus, any top job. It's just not true. But we live in a country in which people still see races. They still react to them. And you know it's true. And so I had tears in my eyes on Tuesday night. I remembered the kids that I grew up with, and I knew what they must feel when they say to their children, anybody can grow up to be president, and for the first time, they believe it. It's true. You can be a Jew, you can be a woman, you can be an African American. That's an extraordinary thing because we used to say it, but nobody believed it. Now we know it's true. It was a fulfillment of the promise of this nation. And by the way, the fulfillment wasn't only in the election. The fulfillment was in the economic crisis. In the midst of the greatest economic crisis that people have seen maybe for decades, all of a sudden the market closes down for Rosh Hashanah. In any other land, at any other time in history, do you know what you would have read in the newspaper and seen on television? How dare the Jews exercise this kind of control over the markets of America that they closed down for Rosh Hashanah? I heard not a word. Not a word. And I thought, this is America. This is the America to which we have given our heart. This is America that is rightly called the last best hope of human beings on earth. And that's what was affirmed. Now, I don't know what will happen subsequently. Maybe it will turn out to be the best choice or the worst choice. This isn't about the candidate. It's about us. It's about the fact that America transcended the ugliness of its history and fulfilled the promise and beauty of its history. If that doesn't touch you, you just don't know America. In 1959, the year that John Howard Griffith published Black Like Me, once again, just 2 years before Barack Obama was born, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was addressing the Hawaii legislature, and he closed with the prayer of a preacher who had been a slave after he was liberated. And this is what he said. He looked up at the heavens and said, "Lord, we ain't what we want to be. We ain't what we ought to be. We ain't what we're going to be. But thank God, we ain't what we was." On November 4th, America proved we ain't what we was, and every American ought to be proud and grateful. Shabbat shalom.